Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, November 20th, 2011, and this is show number 340. Well, I hope you enjoyed that special surprise episode number 339, all of our interviews from Blog World Expo. Steve also posted the video of Adam Christensen and me doing our talk at Blog World entitled Beyond the Technical. I put it up on podfeet.com, so check that out too. It's pretty fun. Adam and I were enjoying ourselves so much that at the end, I had to give him the hook to pull him off stage. Steve said I was mean, but we were way past our time. I have to give Katie Floyd credit here too. It was actually her idea to do this talk, and she even put most of the notes together that we ended up using for the talk. Unfortunately, the people doing the scheduling at Blog World did not tell us they'd accepted our talk until it was too late for Katie to make the reservations to come out for it. Thanks to Adam for stepping into her place and making it a success, and thanks to Katie for doing all the work. Last week, I described our experience with the Apple Genius and figuring out how to figure out what was wrong with Kyle's MacBook Pro when it wasn't charging. I had done the system management console reset myself before we went in. That's the thing that often fixes power issues. And the so-called Genius did the wrong kind of SMC reset. She used the one for the MacBook Pros with a sealed battery, even though the one she was using had a removable battery. In any case, she was unable to find anything wrong with the machine, but while she was working on it, it continued to say not charging, so it was showing the symptoms, but she couldn't figure out what was wrong. Well, the Nosilla castaways came through. Nick Brennan wrote into me and simply told us to try the SMC reset again. He said he's seen this happen before, where the first reset doesn't fix it, but the second one does. Kyle ran the reset again, the right one, and it fixed the problem. So, about that Genius title they use at Apple. Well, anyway, thanks for the help, Nick. Really appreciate it, and Kyle is happily charging away.
Hi, Allison, and fellow Nosilla Castaways. This is Rod Simmons from Simple Mobile Review. This week, I actually want to do a quick follow-up on some of my past picks. One was my pick from last week, and one was from a couple weeks ago. So a couple weeks ago, I told you guys about one of my favorite headsets, and it really is still my favorite. It's called the Plantronics Voyager Pro Plus. And the reason why I told you that I like the Pro Plus is because it added in a feature for A2DP, or Bluetooth streaming over, or streaming audio over Bluetooth. It still is my favorite headset. It's actually the one I honestly have sitting on my head right now. I use it all day for work. Well, being a geek and hanging out with geeks all the time, the guys over at Simple Mobile Review, Chris Ashley and Brent Harmon, did me one up. Plantronics released a new headset called the Plantronics Voyager Pro HD. Because, of course, I don't have it, and they do, and they're telling me how fantastic of a headset it is. Well, the reason why it's such a good headset is because it has some smarts built into it that when you answer a phone call, it says, oh, the headset's not on your ear. So it doesn't route the call to Bluetooth. It routes it to the handset. So it has this intelligence of knowing that the headset is on your head or not. For example, you're streaming Bluetooth content. You take the headset off and it stops streaming to the headset. I mean, what a great concept. I haven't bought it yet, but I'm pretty sure by the time you listen to this, I've already ordered it. But I wanted to give you guys an update. So if anybody's considering a Bluetooth headset, they should probably consider the Plantronics Voyager HD over the Pro Plus. Again, I'm still happy with my Pro Plus, but I'm jealous because two people who I talk to every day has a new one. All right, now for my second follow-up. Last week, I did a recommendation of a 3-in-1 lens kit for your iPhone. And I know most people are thinking, really, dude, come on. But I'm really happy with that purchase. When I purchased that one, I also got another 3-in-1 lens kit called the Olloclip, O-L-L-O-C-L-I-P. And while I do like the other one that I picked, this one is twice the price, or actually three times the price. So the 3-in-1 that I told you guys about was like $23. This is $69, so it is actually pretty much exactly three times the price. But what you get is an all-in-one kit. So it's actually a molded piece that sits together. The value you would get out of going and paying three times the price for the exact same thing is that it's all-in-one. It slides over the corner of your iPhone. I'll provide Allison with some pictures to help you guys out, or you can look it up on Amazon. But you slide it over the corner of your iPhone, and it perfectly aligns with the lens. So there's none of that buying an extra case, cutting it, gluing the ring onto that. You don't have to do any of that, although I am very happy with that solution. But I will take this, throw it in my pocket this weekend. I'm taking my wife to see the Redskins Cowboys game, and I'm going to take a whole bunch of shots. So hopefully by the time you guys are recording the show, Allison should have her inbox filled up with a bunch of different pictures with and without the lens so she can share those with you. If you're considering one of the 3-in-1 lenses, if you want to go on the cheaper, like I say, I love the 3-in-1 lens kit that I have, and with the system of the case, it works really well. But if you're more about convenience and you're not willing, and you're willing to spend a little bit more in price, you might want to consider the Olo clip because it really is a nice one. I have a post that should be going up on Simple Mobile Review early next week, probably on Monday, because I'm going to include some of the pictures from the Redskins game in that, and that'll be up on the site if you want to check it out. So this is just a quick follow up. I also have a review to do, but that'll be in another audio clip.
All right, Rod, last week I said the 3-in-1 lens kit was on my Christmas list, but I just changed my Christmas list to the Olo clip. I know it's a lot more money, but I think I'd actually use this because it's all in one and I don't have to carry all these separate pieces. You know, I couldn't quite figure out from the photos you sent exactly how to change lenses, but this little gadget looks really like something up my alley. I'm really looking forward to that. Well, I got to tell you guys, I learned a big shortcoming of Screen Steps this week. I was really disappointed. See, my friend Doreen asked me to help her with printing address labels for her holiday cards this year. So I figured before I came over, I'd make her a really cool set of instructions to use, and of course I created them in Screen Steps. When I got to her house, though, she hadn't even printed them out yet, much less read them to get a head start on learning what she'd have to do. Well, it turns out they have to actually remember to send the Screen Steps tutorial to the person before they can actually follow them. Yeah, I kind of forgot that step. I swear I did it, though. I could have sworn. Well, anyway, the good news is that when I got to her house, I printed them out for her, and I was able to point step by step for her so she'd be able to replicate those steps when I was gone. You know, I love to make these kinds of instructions. You and I both know that all you do to print address labels now is create a group, drag people into it, then select print and choose the address labels that you bought and select say done. But when you actually go through it with someone who hasn't got a lot of experience with the Mac, it turns out there's a lot of little nuances to making it work. And that's where screenshots and annotations on them with Screen Steps really makes it useful for them. When I left her house, I knew she'd have the document to go back to later, and it would reduce the number of support calls after the fact. If you want to have fun like this, go over to BlueMangoLearning.com and check out both Screen Steps and their newest product, Clarify. Heck, why don't you put both of those products on your holiday list and get somebody to buy them for me because you know you want them. Do it. All right, next up, I'm going to do something completely unfair. I'm going to review the Kindle Fire after 2 15-minute plays with it. Can't exactly call this an exhaustive review, but I can't resist. When I first heard about how it would work, I thought this would be a runaway success, mostly because it's a very inexpensive portal to buy products from Amazon. As a fan of Amazon, and from a distance watching a spectacular business model revealed, I figured it was genius. I'm not sure that I was wrong, but I have to say, I'm not delighted with the Fire. Now, it's very hard not to compare the Fire to an iPad, and I hope I wasn't judging it to a device 2.5 times its price. So let's think first about what the Fire should be for $200. Should be a good book reader. Should be a passable web browser. It should be easy to attach to a wireless network since it doesn't have 3G. And it should be light because it's only a 7-inch screen. Since we knew ahead of time it was based on the BlackBerry Playbook hardware, we expect that it would have gorgeous video playback as well. So there are some differences in the hardware from the Playbook. They moved the awful power button from the long side to the short side of the device, which I thought would be good, but two different people who had them both complained to me that when they held it to read a book in the portrait mode, that was right where their finger was and they kept turning the device off. One of them figured out, well, just flip it over and it works just fine. They did replace the proprietary connectors that the Playbook had, so now it has just a nice little micro USB connector, and I think that's going to be a nice feature. The first thing you'll think of when you pick up a Fire, though, is, dang, this thing's heavy. The 7-inch Fire weighs in at 14.5 ounces, while the 10-inch iPad weighs 22 ounces. Now, this may seem like a geometry hoax here, but a 7-inch tablet actually is half the size of a 10-inch tablet. But the Fire weighs 65% as much as an iPad. Now, that doesn't sound like a huge difference, but it's amazing how much you notice it when it's just a few ounces. I think percentage-wise, it's a big number, actually. Every person I've talked to or listened to on shows or I've been in the room with when they picked up a fire went, whoa, that's heavy. So I think it's actually pretty dense. Now, the Kindle Fire doesn't have a physical volume rocker. All right, we're used to a company that doesn't believe in buttons, but that one seems like a bit of an odd decision. I figure they do it in software, and when we played a song, sure enough, we got an on-screen volume slider that worked just fine. But later, when we went to play a video, the on-screen volume slider caused the song to start playing again and to control its volume, rather than allowing us to hear and control the video. Looks like a little bit of a software bug there. One of the biggest surprises, and not in a good way, of the Fire is that page turning on the Kindle app is actually really jerky. I'm so used to watching the pages flip nicely in the Kindle app on my iPad that I was really shocked they hadn't made the effort to make reading of all things a superb experience. Now, maybe coming from a true Kindle, people wouldn't expect smoothness because, you know, you have that e-ink kind of jolt that happens, but it's quite a shock coming from the iPad. Now, you might think that, hey, the hardware is only $200, so don't judge it how well it's going to do this, but the Fire plays video beautifully. It's really, really smooth. I checked out the Netflix app, and it was a real joy on the Fire. I found a TV show really easily, I clicked on play, and immediately the video began to play. Now, this was using the Fire on a 4G mobile hotspot, so the speed was pretty good. Now, it wasn't as crisp as a native video would play on the device, but that's more a factor of the compression that comes along with video streaming. I also streamed a show from Amazon, and again, it was delightfully easy to bring up, and it looked really nice. The homepage of the Kindle Fire has a cover flow-like interface where you flip through your apps and media, like we used to flip back and forth between record albums in the old days. If you don't know what those are, just go ask your mom. Anyway, this cover flow-ish kind of look is really pretty and fluid, but I didn't find it terribly useful. You end up with this jumble of stuff. You've got an app, then a song, then a movie, then another app, a book. It's kind of a mess. I also found it hard to stop this carousel of images on the exact thing I actually wanted to choose. So it was pretty, but not that useful. I believe there's a bookshelf mode, too, that looks a little more useful, but I never actually ran across it myself. There's a software switch to lock the screen in a specific orientation. I locked it in portrait mode, and when I asked it to play a video, it automatically switched to landscape mode. I thought that was terrific. Now, some might want it to obey what they told it to do, but I really like that it overrode my decision, because you're much more likely to want to watch a video in landscape mode. Now, I'm not sure how important web browsing will be for this device, since its whole objective is to get you into the Amazon store to buy stuff, but it seems to me that it might be in the top, say, five things you'd want to do. We went to Amazon.com using the device and clicked on a video on their home screen, and it looked horrible. I mean, remember, it plays video really well, right? But on their home screen, this video was really jaggy looking, even in that small embedded video player. We switched it to full screen, and it stayed awful. After that, when we got out of the video, the images that were on the same page also appeared jaggy when they had looked fine before we played the video. Oddly enough, it seemed to kind of heal itself after a little bit. Now, I don't know if that's part of this silk browser we've been hearing about, but it looks like that might need a little bit of work in software. Now, here's the weirdest thing I found in web browsing. Try to follow this. This is really a strange effect. I went to podfeet.com. Of course, that's the first place you're going to go, right? Right? Anyway, my website theme can identify if you're coming from a mobile browser, and it presents you with a mobile-friendly view. That worked great on the Kindle, and then I clicked on the button at the bottom of the page that allows you to view the site in its real form. It rendered beautifully on the Fire, looked great. It was pretty small, though. I clicked the link in my latest blog post, and it came up in all its glory. But then I clicked a link in the middle of the text in the body of the blog post, and the entire web page got selected. And it showed this visually by drawing a box around the whole web page, and it took me to Amazon. Now, you might think that Amazon hijacked my browsing experience on purpose, but I think it was actually picking up the Amazon affiliate link in my left sidebar. In any case, I'd have to give the web browsing experience a pretty heavy fail for that one. I mean, that was pretty strange. So anyway, bottom line, from using two different Kindle Fires for about 15 minutes each, I have to say I'm a little bit disappointed. Not that it's not the fastest, coolest iPad-killing tablet, but because it doesn't do a great job as a book reader, it's very heavy, and it kind of fails on the web surfing front. Other than the weight, all of this can be fixed in software, so I think this still will be a success, and if you're considering it, maybe you want to wait for the next rev of the software before you do run out and buy it. Or heck, get it for the holidays and then get the software update later.
Hi, Allison. This is Tom Stewart from Arva, Ontario, Canada. I know you are a keen photographer and an aperture user, so I would like to share this tip/product with you. Like most photographers, I like the post-processing benefits of raw images, but I like the space-saving size of JPEG files. The reality is that probably 95% of our pictures could be shot in JPEG and still be perfect for their ultimate use. However, we never know when we press the shutter if the resulting file will be one of that 95% or one of the other 5%. The solution is to shoot all of our images in RAW, and then once any preliminary processing is done, to save those 95% as JPEGs. I have found a great tool to make this process painless. In my aperture workflow, I first delete any images which I don't want to keep, and make any global white balance adjustments to the other images in the batch. I then rate the images from 1 to 5 stars. The 4 and 5 stars are those which are special, and I may want to enter into competition, and I will keep those in RAW to give me future flexibility. I then select the balance of the images and run an Apple script, which I purchased for $1.99 from apertureexpert.com. This script runs the following aperture processes to convert my selected RAW images to JPEGs. It exports the selected images into another format and size. In my case, I chose JPEG, original size. It re-imports them back into the project in the new format. And it marks all of the original selected RAW images as rejected. This leaves the original images in your project and gives you the chance to ensure that the new copy is converted properly before you manually select and trash the rejected images. I just ran this process on a project with 97 images. It took less than 9 minutes and regained almost a gigabyte of disk space. While I could do the same process manually, the script enables me to start the process and walk away while the work has been done. It is also worth noting that deleting the rejected images in Aperture leaves them in the Aperture trash bin. Emptying the Aperture trash bin moves them into the OS X trash bin. This gives several opportunities to change your mind, but remember to empty both the Aperture and OS X trash bins to realize the space savings. Once I have gone through my existing projects, it should reduce the size of my Aperture library considerably, which will definitely speed up my backups. Although hard disk space is cheap, it is nice to have all of my photo collection in the one Aperture library. And given that we have on-site backups, Time Machine backups, off-site backups, and archival backups, the space savings do multiply. The other point to remember is that the JPEG images can still be edited and will be best for many uses such as uploading to the web, printing, or emailing. The instructions with the script are great, but in addition, you will need to lock the script after you have copied it into the destination folder. Right-click, get info, check the lock box. That's all. Love your show.
Hey, thanks, Tom, for that. This is a great idea. I gotta say, I love how you first identified the why of this, you know, the problem to be solved, and then you gave us just enough detail in the solution that we could follow along, but not excruciating detail. I thought the only solution to the RAW problem was just buy bigger and bigger hard drives. That's what I've been doing so far. $2 for an Apple script is a much more interesting solution. By the way, I can't believe this is your first review. The audio quality was fantastic. I sure hope you find more things to review for us in the future, Tom. This was excellent. Well, y'all know I'm a big fan of Text Expander from Smile. I use it constantly. I find it hard to express exactly how critical this tool for me is, and to try to figure out how to translate it into how it can help you. Let's see. While I was writing these show notes, I used it to expand BMW semicolon into the full web link for Blue Mango Learning. I put in the ending of the show notes by typing end semicolon. Every new subject on the blog has what's called a heading tag, size 3, and I create those by typing comma H3. Screen steps and text expander, that's a SS semicolon and TE semicolon. I had to enter some HTML in over on my blog post to post the Blog World Expo video, and putting in the line breaks was comma BR. Heck, every time I say Blog World Expo, that's BWE semicolon. Later in the show, you'll hear my review of the BlackBerry 9930. BlackBerry is spelled BB semicolon in my world. Chit-chat across the pond? That's way too many characters to type. How about CCATP in a semicolon? Heck, one of my favorites is NoSilla Castaways, which is NCS semicolon. You'll notice I use the semicolon on a lot of those. That's because I don't actually know what they're for, so I know I will never type them in real life. Actually, somebody sent me one of those really funny block diagrams that explains grammar, and it does explain how to use a semicolon, so I think I'm catching on, but I still like it. Anyway, I could go on and on, but just think, in one blog post, how many characters I've saved by using Text Expander. If you type at all, and you're either a really poor typer and would like to go faster, or you're a speedy typer who just can't stand to waste a second, both of you would love Text Expander. If you've been delaying getting it for some crazy reason, just put it on your holiday list. Click the link in the show notes to buy Text Expander from the Mac App Store for all of your computers.
Hi, Allison and fellow Nasilla Castaways. This is Rod Simmons from Simple Mode Review. This week, I'm actually going to, I guess it's really not a review. I'm going to tell you about a gadget. It's like a Kickstarter project. Brent brought it to my attention, and honestly, the first time I saw the picture, I was like, dude, I got to have this. So if you think I spend a lot of your money, you've got to meet Brent. He's one of those guys who, when he travels, he doesn't just travel with his laptop bag and his carry-on luggage. Well, actually, he does carry with carry-on luggage, but his carry-on bag is actually just a bag of toys he likes to bring with him, and it has like all types of gadgets. It's like it's unbelievable. It's like kid in a candy store type bag. But to the point. What are we talking about here? It's about power. So several weeks ago, I reviewed for you guys the iSound, which is actually one of my favorite little devices I keep in my bag for keeping my devices charged. Well, one of the things we've done at Simple Mobile Review is we've reviewed a lot of like power charging devices, from the Energizer XP 18,000 to solar type charging devices. And that's what the Ray Solar Charger is. It's a solar charger. So the picture that I saw from Brent, and again, I'll give this to Allison so she can include it in the show notes, was of like a suction cup sitting on an airplane window with a USB thing tied into it. And of course, on the other end has to be your device. That just absolutely captures it for me, because there are times where, you know, like it's easy to put things in your bag and have your bag at your foot and then have all these cables draping down to your bag to charge. But there's also something really cool about being environmentally friendly for charging. So the Ray Solar Charger is something that can use either multitudes of types of light sources, from natural light or artificial light, to actually charge up a device. So you could sit it on a table in a room and actually charge a device, or you could actually sit it in sunlight and charge a device. So it's kind of cool, like when you're going camping and you need to keep your phone charged up in case of emergency, for things like that. They're not going to start production of this until they sell 2,000 units. And as of Brent's writing of the post, they were only at 1,927 units. It's a really cool looking device. And if it's anything like the Olo Clip, which was a Kickstarter project, or I mean, really a variety of other things that started off as Kickstarter projects, including like the iPod Nano watch band, this should be a pretty cool success. So again, for me, it's when I saw it, I was like, this is something that I really resonated towards. The price is going to be $49.99, but on the initial production run, they're only charging people $39.99 if it's something you're interested in. So again, like I say, Brent brought this to my attention. It was definitely something that I was interested in, because I like the idea of having little, small, convenient things to charge. So I could keep my Energizer brick either in my checked luggage, because I don't need it, let's say, on the plane. And I could take something like this and put it in my bag so I could use it when I'm on a plane and I can get just a little bit of a charge. What I'm probably interested in is getting some more stats about how much power it actually seeps through to a device in an hour, 2 hour period. But it's kind of nice to be able to do things that feel a little bit more green. So if you're interested in getting a way to get some natural power, i.e. using a light source versus having to actually plug in and use, you know, in-wall electricity, I would recommend looking at, I can't recommend buying because I haven't used it yet, the Ray Solar Charger. Again, like I say, the picture just captured me, and I think that a lot of other people might be interested in it.
All right, Rod, that thing looks really nifty. And for $40, think how useful this would be to have, say, in a power outage. Well, okay, not at night, but you might be the only person with a charged cell phone during the day. I'm getting a really good Christmas list from listening to you, Rod. Keep up the good work. So you guys know I'm a big fan of the iPhone, right? Well, when I'm working, though, the BlackBerry can actually be a pretty tolerable device for the job, as long as that job is emailing and checking your calendar. I've been using a BlackBerry for quite a few years, starting way back with the 7230. It had big, flat buttons that were easy to click, and it had this dreadful, small, low-resolution grayscale screen, and it changed my work life. But more about that later. This week, I got the new BlackBerry 9930 from AT&T. I first heard about the new models from Rob Dunwood over on the Simple Mobile Review podcast, but he said they were only available on Verizon at first. I set him up as my early warning system to give me a tip when they came out on AT&T, and he came through like a champ. I want to back up a little bit and describe the BlackBerry I was using just prior to this new model. About a year ago, I got the BlackBerry Torch right after it came out. And for a BlackBerry, I didn't think it was that bad. A lot of people didn't like it, but I thought it was kind of the best of both worlds. It had a slide-out keyboard, but a touchscreen so I could still type with a real keyboard, but when I wanted to just select something, I could touch it with my finger. I tried their on-screen keyboard, but ergonomically it wasn't very good, so I just ignored that part. The Torch is a rather narrow phone, so the screen is small, but it's thick because of the slide-out keyboard. In this case, the worst of both worlds, small screen and thick. I also didn't like how tiny the keys were. They were kind of sharp on your fingers, a really uncomfortable typing experience. And when the BlackBerry's whole job is to be a good typing experience, that's not a good thing. So let's now talk about these new BlackBerries. There's two model lines, the Bold and the Torch. And after my Torch experience, I was ready to go back to the Bold. The AT&T version is the BlackBerry Bold 9930, and it is an actually gorgeous device. It's the same length as an iPhone at 4.5 inches. It's only a smidge thicker than the iPhone. Smidge is a technical term. Go look it up. It means like 0.04 inches thicker. It's about 0.3 inches wider, though. It's so dramatically thinner than the Torch, I really notice how sleek it feels. It's got nice rounded corners and a slick back, and the extra width just doesn't feel wrong in the hand. I asked quite a people to try it, from big guys to women with small hands, and they all said that it did not feel too wide for their hands. The display is much bigger than the Torch, but still quite a bit smaller than the iPhone at only 2.8 inches diagonally, sporting exactly half the number of pixels of an iPhone. Again, comparing an iPhone to a BlackBerry Bold 9930, it's no competitor, but for a BlackBerry, it's really, really pretty. The back is very slick, and it actually looks like Kevlar on the back, but a friend of mine said maybe it was just a picture of Kevlar. I'm not really sure, but it still looks really good. It feels really, really good. A little bit slippery, so a couple of people said, man, I feel like I'm going to drop it, and a friend of mine who has one also did drop hers, so I'm not sure, but it feels really good. Now, I mentioned how much I dislike the sharp little chiclet keys on the Torch. Well, the BlackBerry Bold 9930 has much nicer flat keys that have just enough extra width to make them very pleasing. I found that I pretty much dislike typing on the Torch so much that I would avoid anything but the shortest responses. But the 9930 is much more pleasing, and I find myself getting a bit more verbose. I still do think I prefer a virtual keyboard, well, like the kind on the iPhone, but for a BlackBerry, this is the best I've used since the earliest days of the 7200 series. Bottom line time. If you're in the market for a new BlackBerry, you can't go wrong with the 9930. I think it's an excellent device. I have to agree with Rob Dunwood. This is the best BlackBerry they've made so far. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond, and I am really excited to have a new guest on the show today. We've got Rob Dunwood from Remarkable.com and also well-known for one of the players on the Simple Mobile Review podcast. How are you doing today, Rob?
I'm doing great, Allison. Thanks for having me on the show.
I really appreciate I pulled you away from football, and that's sort of like a criminal sin there, isn't it?
Well, as I was saying earlier before we started, I am in Columbus, Ohio. But I didn't play for Ohio State, so It's okay if I actually miss them play a game or two.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you taking time out. So one of the reasons I wanted to get you on was because there's been a lot of interesting news going on lately with Research in Motion, the makers of the BlackBerry. And I thought it might be kind of fun to go back through some of the history of how we got to where we are today. And I know you've been a big fan of the BlackBerry, but you're also very realistic about where their shortcomings are and the mistakes they're making today. And so I thought it might be interesting to talk through that and where you think you see things going.
Oh, absolutely. I'm about as big a BlackBerry fan as you will find. But if you remember, when we were together at Blog World a few weeks ago, what phone did I have in my pocket? It was not a BlackBerry. So I am realistic. I hope that company can get it turned around. But they seem to just lately be making mistake after mistake after mistake. And the future is not bright. I still have a glimmer of hope for them. But RIM has got to make some internal changes in a big way in order for them to be viable going forward.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Well, let's start back at the beginning. How did you first get involved with RIM at all?
Well, actually, I didn't even know that this device was called a BlackBerry, but going way back, and this has got to be like 98, 99, I was just working at a company, and we had an on-call pager that they gave us. You take it home with you on the weekends, or if you were on call that week for any time a router or server or something like that would go down. I had this device that was, a two-way pager. It wasn't even called a BlackBerry. It was just called the RIM 850 Interactive Pager. Mm-hmm. And when you think of pagers, this is what it was. I mean, it had the iconic BlackBerry keyboard on it, but it was simply a pager that you could send messages and receive messages. And the thing worked like clockwork. It worked great. And probably used that thing for a good two and a half years.
That's back in the day when it was tech geeks and drug dealers had pagers, right?
and medical professionals. And beyond that, not too many people had them.
Yeah.
I remember when I had that device, I actually was carrying at the time a Nokia phone, mm-hmm. as well as a Palm Pilot. not a Palm Trio, a Palm Pilot. It was just a monochrome screen device that you could put contact information into.
That changed the world. That Palm Pilot changed everything.
Right. So I've been using that BlackBerry, going way back. I don't know if that was the first one, but it might have been the second one. So we're going back a long, long time. And actually, because I was using it for work, when I changed jobs, the new place that I went to didn't use them. And I don't think that I've ever called it a BlackBerry. It was just it was a pager that I could get email on that was kind of cool. But this is in the days when email was not, somebody sent you an email, you didn't feel like you needed to reply instantaneously. If you got back to them in a day or two, it was okay.
So it was sort of just situational awareness. You knew somebody needed something, but you didn't have to get back to them.
Exactly. So when I left the company that actually gave me that pager, I went away from it. I went back to just carrying my Palm Pilot for a short period of time. And I just remember wishing, it's like, man, if I could get that email on this thing like I did on that BlackBerry, it would be great. Or if I could actually, combine my Palm Pilot, my phone, and my BlackBerry, that would just be a ridiculous device.
I'm so unvisionary. I remember at the time that the Palm Pilots first came out, my friend Eric said, you got to get one of these. This thing's amazing. And I said, well, what do I need that for? I got my planner right here, and I'm carrying this 8.5 by 11 notebook that's like 3.5 inches thick, weighs 14 pounds. And he kept saying, I can't explain it, Allison. You just got to get one. When you get it, you'll get it. And so I said, all right, well, he's never lied to me before. So I got one and I never looked back, man. That was such a big, big improvement to go to that.
Right. So here's the interesting thing. Once I stopped using that interactive pager, I didn't go to another BlackBerry. In fact, when I got a brand new device, I went to a Windows mobile phone. I think it was like AudioVox or something like that, or running on T-Mobile. And I went with it because it was like the BlackBerry didn't have a color screen on it. It didn't have all the cool applications you could get on it. Mm-hmm. You could basically just send and receive email and make phone calls. And it worked, but it was not a pretty device. But after using Windows Mobile for a while, it's like, man, it's like, you know, this is a lot prettier, but it doesn't work all that often. So I didn't get back into BlackBerry until they came out with like the first device with a color screen on it. And that was the BlackBerry 7210. And that had to be around, I don't know, 2003, into 2003, 2004, somewhere in that area. And I basically, up until probably 2009, never looked back. For a long time.
I'm amazed at your recall on dates, because I was trying to go back and figure out which models I even had used, and I was trying to remember. I think I started on the 7230. That was the blue one that had the really nasty grayscale screen, and it was kind of dark, and it changed my world. I mean, not being a visionary at all, they said, well, you know, you really should get one of these BlackBerry things. And I'm thinking, well, that's just a tether. It's a chain. You know, it's they can always get a hold of me. And this guy, Mike Lewald, explained to me, he said, no, it's the exact opposite. Is it actually frees you, because you can get phone calls from, on it, so that if somebody calls your office, it'll ring over to your BlackBerry. And he said, it changed his life, because every night he would go home for dinner, have dinner with the family, and then he'd push back from the table and then go back and do an hour of email in his office to get everything taken care of. And mm-hmm. he said when he got the BlackBerry, he found that, you know, he could answer this email while he was in the elevator, and he could answer that email when he was waiting for a meeting to get started. And he said it actually changed his life from – he'd never had to go do email after dinner ever again. And I was like, okay, well, this guy hates technology, and if he says it's good, this must be something. And that's when I finally jumped in.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a really good point, because if you just think back, you know, it seems like, you know, 2011, we've been using email for 45 years, but email really didn't catch on and wasn't a big thing until really like 2001, 2002, when people started to, you know, actively use email. And the BlackBerry made doing that easier, because, you know, you didn't have to write a paragraph a lot. A lot of times it was just yes, no, I'll be there, sounds good, you know, and you could respond back. And that's exactly right. You didn't have to go back into the office to answer all those, you know, really quick, short answer type responses that you could give back.
Right. Or just know, like I was saying earlier, the situational awareness is when I had a job where I got a ridiculous amount of email, and on my way into work, I'd stop at a stoplight, never, ever, ever using my devices when I'm driving. Let it be said loud and clear here. I think that's insanity. But at a stoplight, I could bring up emails and just see who's waiting for me, who's going to ambush me when I walk in the door because there's some big crisis going on. And it really helped to just start that situational awareness, to know what you were up against when you got into the office.
Right. So, yeah, BlackBerry, when it comes to email, it's synonymous with it. I would even say still today, with the issues that the company's having, they're synonymous with it. So if you think back, the BlackBerry really started to dominate, you know, really became the device that every business user had to have around that 2004, 2005. And at that time, I think it was late 2004, they released a new line of device. It was called the BlackBerry Pearl. And it was the candy bar style BlackBerry. The one knock that you know, a lot of people who didn't like BlackBerries were they were big clunky devices that had all these buttons on them, and people just like having the slim phones. Well, they released that BlackBerry Pearl, and at that point you had it wasn't just business users who were looking at BlackBerries. You had consumers who started looking at them, and I would say like late 2004 until the iPhone came out, BlackBerry just had a ridiculous run. Research in Motion had a ridiculous run on putting those devices out. They, you know, whenever a new device would come out, didn't matter if you were under contract or not, you would just go get the next one because Vrim put something new out.
You know, that again is my lack of vision. It never occurred to me I'd want to have something like this for my home life. At the time, I was just, really? Why would people buy it for home?
Yeah.
Now, of course, my iPhone is attached to the end of my arm.
Well, you do have to give that to Vrim. I mean, they really changed the way that people use phones. You know, I think I've got a 16-year-old daughter. She simply does not talk on the phone. It's almost as though it's uncomfortable for her to make a phone call on a phone.
I don't like
she uses it simply
like
for just texting texting and SMS.
Yeah, it's just it seems so crude. And actually rude to call people on the phone. It seems like why would I like actually call them? You know, when I was trying to get a hold of you this morning, when I'd screwed up the dates and times, it's like the idea of calling you on the phone seemed really intrusive to me. I'm so used to just, you know, everything's electronic.
Yeah, I'm what I call myself antisocial when it comes to tech. So I actually like talking. I don't really like talking on the phone, but I almost prefer talking on the phone to having to send a text message. It's like, well, I have to actually read. That's work. I can listening is pretty much, you know, I don't have to do any work to listen to you say something. Now, I may not answer the phone. Just leave me a voicemail and I'll listen to it if I get back to you.
That's why I like Heytel, right? Is because I can send you a voicemail. You send me a voicemail. We go back and forth. That seems civilized, too.
Is that not one of the greatest applications?
I love it. I haven't gotten enough people to use it yet, but I think it's awesome.
It is a really cool app. But you know what? That's a good segue into what is going on with RIM. Heytel doesn't exist on the BlackBerry, as do hundreds of thousands of other applications out there. And when iPhone came out in June 2007? Research in Motion, who was still dominating everything. You know, everybody thinks that the iPhone came out and that was the end for RIM. Well, no, RIM had another run for another 2 years after the initial iPhone came out. They just didn't do anything with it. And, you know, the big problem with the BlackBerry is that, well, you're still running the same operating system that it had when I had back in the late 90s with that 850 two-way pager. And there were no apps, or the apps that existed were incredibly difficult for developers to create. And Apple came on the scene, and they really just changed the paradigm for what a smartphone is, what people think a smartphone should do. And Research in Motion, I would say that almost all of the problems that they are experiencing right now is because they did not adjust to how the market was changing, and it is simply floating right past them.
Well, I want to back up a little bit. I think they started to fall off the wagon, even device-wise, when they came out with the BlackBerry Storm. And I've heard you guys refer to that as not the most revolting piece of electronic hardware on earth of all time. And I don't understand it. That was the worst piece of crap I've ever used.
Well, you know what? The BlackBerry Storm came out in response to the iPhone. So if you were thinking, if you were an iPhone user, or you had had an iPhone, or even if you had had like the first Android devices that came out that actually did touchscreens the right way, when you went to the Storm, I was like, what is this piece of crap? Now, I happen to be one of the 11 people who got a BlackBerry Storm that actually did not have any issues with it. My device worked perfectly. I think there's only 11 of us, but the device did what it did, and I actually liked it. In fact, I liked my Storm so much that when the Storm 2 came out, I got the Storm 2, didn't like it, took it back, and went back to using my Storm.
There was no redeeming features to that thing. Nothing whatsoever.
Well, no, because, you know, if you were thinking of it in the sense of an iPhone, it doesn't do any of that stuff. It didn't have the great apps.
I couldn't type on it.
The
W didn't work. The screen was actually shifted so that the keys on the left side couldn't be touched.
You're right. Like, so, yeah, the people who had those devices that had the bad ones, they were really bad.
I think,
and you know, Research in Motion up until that point had been considered that, well, just get a BlackBerry because if anything, you know, the thing is going to work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people refer to the BlackBerry as like the roach or the cockroach of cell phones. They work no matter what. They always work. And you're right. The Storm came out. I think me and 10 other people got ones that worked. And Rod happened to be one of them as well.
I will concede it's possible there were some functional storms. But there was another guy at work who actually preferred it. And after reading my review of it, a lot of the people I worked with said, well, the other guy must be an idiot because how could he like it after what you said about it? They said it actually reduced his credibility because he liked it. But anyway, you started to talk about the development of apps for the iPod or for the BlackBerry. And I was really influenced in my thinking by an open letter from a developer named Jamie Murai. And I put a link in the show notes to this little letter that he wrote where he described how incredibly difficult it is to develop for the platform. I mean, up to and including when you first sign up for the development kit, you have to print out a document, take it to a notary public, and send a paper document to RIM.
Yeah, that worked out really well for him. you know, it's just, I think that RIM, if you were only selling these devices to business users, then you might be able to get away with something like that. You know, send to the legal department. There is a notary right there. You can get it done. It's not an issue. Mm-hmm. But when, you know, when phones are being bought by people who just, I just want to have a cool phone so I can play whatever game I want to play, or I just want to keep contacts, or whatever it is that consumers use phones for, the barriers that the company has in place, and they've removed a lot, but it's kind of like, you know, burn me once, you know, shame on you. Burn me twice, shame on me. People say, "Hey, I'm not dealing with that," and they just move away. And you know, when
it's hard
they
to
move
get
away to the iPhone, it's really hard to get them back. It's really hard to get them back. Now, I will be the first one to tell you that when it comes to messaging, I think that there is no better device that has ever been conceived at messaging on a mobile platform than is the BlackBerry. But it's very utilitarian to think of it that way. The device does email. It does texting. It does, you know, pin-to-pin messaging. And as long as there's no network outage for 4 or 5 days across the planet Earth, that stuff tends to work pretty well. But when you want to play Angry Birds, when you want to do all those other things, that, you know, RIM just does not have the developer support. They can tell you all day till they're blue in the face that, well, yes, we do, but they really don't. They don't. You know, 450,000 apps as compared to 40 or 50,000 apps.
You know, you talk about BlackBerry Messenger, and you've mentioned this a lot of times in the show, and your daughter depending on BBM and this kind of thing. And the funniest thing, Rob, I've never used it. I didn't even know it was there. I do know people would send me a PIN number. They'd say, "Oh, I got a new phone. Here's my new PIN number." And I'd sit there going, "What am I supposed to do with that?"
I've basically seen two camps of people with BlackBerry Messenger. The consumers, the reason that they got a BlackBerry was because of BlackBerry Messenger. And business users, that a lot of times the organization would actually turn that off. If you really think about instant messaging and definitely mobile messaging, that's really just caught on in the last, you know, couple of years. But if you go back 4 or 5 years ago, companies thought, well, we need to turn that IM stuff off. We're losing productivity because of it. So a lot of business users of BlackBerry like yourself never really got into BlackBerry Messenger because it may have been turned off or it's just simply something they didn't use. But when you start looking at the consumers and you get outside of the United States and Canada, when you start going, you know, to Europe and Asia, you know, it's basically SMS is not, you know, as inexpensive as it probably could be if it weren't for the phone carriers. But when you have a BlackBerry, all that stuff is just included in the price of having the BlackBerry service. So messaging on that thing is
the
really,
analogy
really big.
Then would be whether iMessage is going to really take off for the iPhone. That would be the same kind of service, right? Because it's only that device to that device.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that it's probably not going to, because with BlackBerry and Messenger, it's always been there, and it was something that you couldn't do without a BlackBerry. Right. Whereas, you know, now that you have iMessage on the iPhone, well, people have had iPhones now, you know, the 4S, that's what, the fifth iPhone to come out? So they've been doing that. They've been contacting people without it for a long time. So the fact that, you know, you have an iPhone but your friend doesn't, you can't use iMessage with them, I don't think it's going to really change your behavior, because if you can't contact somebody who you were contacting before because of an application, I don't think the application is going to do anything to add value to that.
Well, I think what you might be not knowing exactly how iMessage works. They did a terrific job with this. So I've got text messaging. It's just a single button, says text message or something like that, whatever it says, messages. And if I'm texting to you, it'll say text message because you're on a BlackBerry or you're on an Android. But if I'm texting to Rod and he's on an iPhone, the color changes, and it changes to blue from green, and instead of saying text message, it says iMessage. So automatically it's sensing, oh, that guy's got an iPhone, let me use iMessage instead. So every time I see it turn blue, I'm not paying the Death Star of AT&T for that message, and it makes me really happy. So I don't have to actively use a different app. I don't have to mess around with figuring out who's got what kind of device. It simply does all the work for me. So that's why I think it could really take off.
That actually makes a lot of sense, but in the grand scheme of things, if you're using iMessage to send a text message, that's changing your behavior, but it's not like it's going to bring somebody else in. I don't think you're going to see somebody who doesn't have an iPhone say, "Oh, because I can now send messages on an iPhone differently, I need to go get that device."
Yeah, that's just kind of, you might be right about that. Yeah,
that's just an opinion. That's just an opinion. Whereas in the past, you actually, when there was no other game in town, it was like, oh, I'm going to get a BlackBerry because this is the only way to communicate with people. Rod and I were talking about this on the SMR podcast, and one of the things I said was that if Apple would have come out and said that iMessage is going to be just iPhone and or iOS only and nothing else, it's like, okay, but I have people who are not using that. Therefore, that's just not an application I'll probably use. I think by them actually, you know, putting it in, the interface is really nice. I was playing with it on, you know, a coworker's phone. It is pretty cool how you can just send a message to a contact. It does, and it figures out how the best way to contact that person is. I do think that's cool, but I don't think that that's something that, you know, is just going to be so unique to, you know, to Apple that it's going to, oh, for this particular reason, I'm going to get an iPhone.
I guess
now.
It's just one of the little added benefits, and you start adding up all the little pieces, and that's when you start going, oh, maybe that's a good device, right?
Yeah, the thing is, there's thousands of those little added benefits. There's so many of them, and you know, I'll be honest. You know, people will tell me that, well, you're anti iPhone, and at one point I was, but here's the reason why. When the original iPhone came out, I didn't stand in line, but I had somebody stand in line to get me the phone. I got the phone, and I'm a BlackBerry user, so I'm used to being able to type with my thumbs. I get the original iPhone, and you could not. You couldn't text, you couldn't type on it in landscape mode. You only could do it in, you know, in portrait mode. And because of that, because of the size, I have very, very large hands. I think you remember.
We should make a short interlude here. When we were at Blog World, I don't know, somebody said that Rob had big hands. I don't know if you said it or Rod, but Rob put his hands down, finger to finger, stretched out, and it was like 4 inches wider than my hands. And I have reasonably large hands. I mean, you have. And it's not like they're fat. They're just long and huge. I can't imagine you right. on a portrait iPhone. That would not work.
Exactly. So that because of that, I was like, this is the dumbest thing ever. Why would you put this keyboard on here in a configuration that people that don't have fairly small hands can use effectively? So that actually – I was upset because I was like, man, if I want to get – you know, I really don't – want to leave my BlackBerry, but if I'm going to, you have to do it for me. And I could not text on that thing to save my life. And I sent it back, and I really was kind of anti-Apple because of that. I was like, wait, I can't do this. Now, granted, they came out with an update and they fixed that, but I was already scorned at that point. It's like, you know, that was an oversight that, you know, Apple should not
right,
have had.
Right. So where did RIM start going wrong at this point in the plot? Or what could they have
done? You
know,
really... I think that, you know, there was a lot of talk back when Palm was going through, before Palm got bought up by HP, and they were going through all the problems that they were going through, that, you know, Research in Motion, your operating system is great, it's utilitarian, it does what it does, but it's so hard to develop these next generation type applications that you're seeing on the iPhone and starting to see on Android. And this is back in, you know, late 2008, you know, early 2009. It's just like, we can't do this. We can't do the, you know, the type of things we want to do. I want to play Angry Birds. I want to, you know, I want to watch video on, you know, on my device. And it was just difficult. So, you know, there was a lot of talk that Research in Motion should have bought Palm. And I think if, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. If you go back and look, I think that the company would be in a much different place right now if they would have actually acquired Palm. Because everybody that I hear that, you know, when it comes to WebOS, they really like the operating system. They just didn't like the phones that Palm came out with. And Palm was having so many other issues that they really couldn't, you know, allow it to thrive. RIM may have been able to take that operating system and make it be something that's not on its way out the door. And I think by not doing that and just being arrogant and thinking that, oh, well, you know, we know better than what millions of people are buying that are on our platform. I mean, literally you had the, you know, the CEOs of the company saying, well, no, we know what our customers want. They, you know, they don't want touchscreen phones. And it's like, have you seen the numbers? Have you seen the lines? You know, when's the last time you saw somebody line up to get a BlackBerry ever? It's never happened.
You know, so. In talking about the development stuff, too, I kind of wonder. A lot of people buy phones and never add anything to them. You know, we do live in a little different world than normal people. And I think a lot of people buy a phone, buy an Android phone, and they may never put anything on it, buy an iPhone, and they just use what's on it. But if you buy a BlackBerry... And, you know, you've got this terrific email system, you know, you've got a terrific way to look at your contacts and your calendar. I mean, it's just fantastic. But the fourth pillar of that for a normal person is web browsing. And the BlackBerrys have just been notoriously dreadful for trying to look at a web page. They're just awful for that. And I wonder whether, I mean, they could have fixed that. They could have made a good browsing experience, and they would have had those four pillars instead of the tripod that falls over.
I honestly wish I could tell you, but the Black, you just got a brand new BlackBerry.
Yes, I did.
That is the first BlackBerry device. It's not on par, in my opinion, with Android. It's not on par with the iPhone, but it's the first mobile browser on a BlackBerry that just isn't god awful to use. It's like okay, I mean, it's not as good as an iPhone, but I can actually get to the site that I'm looking for. I can actually use this. But before BlackBerry 7, the browsing on a BlackBerry was so bad that it was almost a joke. It was like, seriously, we didn't put any time or effort into
this. And people just wouldn't do it. You know, I get in a bunch of arguments with my friend Niraj because he is the one person on the planet who actually uses his BlackBerry to surf the web. And he keeps saying, no, lots of people do. And I've done surveys with a whole group of people in the room, and everybody's like, what, are you nuts? No, I don't ever use that. So, but yeah, I was very happy with, Rob had mentioned that he got the new, yours is a 9900, is that right?
I got the actual 9900, 9930 are the same devices, one CDMA for Verizon, Sprint, the other.
Right, right. And so you had mentioned it and said that it was the best BlackBerry you'd ever used, with the caveat that it's still a BlackBerry. But I was intrigued by that, so I asked you to let me know when the 9930 came out for AT&T, and I was pretty happy. By this time in the show, people will have heard my review of it, but dang. This thing is gorgeous. It is. I really, really like it. It's still a BlackBerry, but I really, really like it.
Yeah, it is. And I would say by far the best BlackBerry that I've ever had, because the one thing that you just brought up, web browsing, is actually doable on this device. if I'm sitting in a room that has Wi-Fi, or you know, I've got a good connection. And I want to go to a web page, is absolutely something you can do. Is it as good as Android? No. Is it as good as iPhone? No. Is it as good as anything that would have a big screen like that that runs something other than BlackBerry operating system? It isn't. But it isn't so bad that you simply just say, I'm just not
going to
try.
Right, right, right. That is what we used to do, right? I haven't surfed a lot. I've got to play around a little more with that and see what see how that experience is, but I'm looking forward to it. It's a combination of having a good, I think a better keyboard than they've had in a long time, because it's flatter keys. They've gotten into these sharp little keys that just irritate the daylights out of me now. And with this one, it's flatter keys and that big broad screen, and it's wide, but it doesn't feel wrong.
Right. It's if you go back several models ago, the first BlackBerry Bolt, the Bolt 9000, it's roughly the keyboard is very similar to that. And, you know, up until the new 9000 series BlackBerrys, 9900 series BlackBerrys, I would have said that the BlackBerry Bolt was the best BlackBerry as far as just the physical nature of the device that I'd ever had. This device is gorgeous. I mean, it's a beautiful device. You sit it down next to an iPhone, and you're not saying, man, this is an ugly old BlackBerry compared to that gorgeous-looking iPhone. I mean, it's a really, really good-looking phone. But the caveat, you have to qualify it. It is a BlackBerry. And if you want a BlackBerry, it's great. It's the best one you probably will ever get. But if you want to do non-BlackBerry things, you're still kind of limited by what the BlackBerry operating system is.
Yeah. I don't know that it's going to save them. But I think it might help them hold on for a little bit longer.
The device is selling quite well. In fact, I've gone into Verizon store here or there to pick one up for somebody, or just to see I've got a buddy who runs several Verizon stores, and just ask him, hey, how's this thing doing? And he would tell me that it is absolutely selling like crazy. It's selling like hotcakes. They can't keep them in the store, but. How many of them are they getting in the store in the first place? That's probably a better question.
We've sold 1,200 phones.
Exactly. So no, they are doing pretty well. I think that you're going to come out and see when they report their this fiscal quarter, that their numbers are all going to be up sharply, and that's because they came out with. I mean, it'd been literally a year since they had come out with a new phone. So you're going to see that. The BlackBerry is the BlackBerry, but the operating system. I believe that the BlackBerry 7 is the last BlackBerry OS that we will see. Everything now is going to be moving towards the QNX based operating system, or as Rim is calling. calling it BBX, and you know, that's going to be the new game for them. And I hope that it turns it around for the company. I just think that they're probably about a year and a half, 2 years.
Well,
let's
shift gears then to the BlackBerry Playbook. You repeatedly have your favorite quote about when you heard about the BlackBerry Playbook coming out. What was it you said? That there's no way it wouldn't come with something.
Yeah, I refuse to believe. I said there's no way that this device is going to come out and not have email on it. And you know, I'm listening to the people say I have the device and there's no email account. Oh, you clearly just haven't found it yet. There's no way that a company synonymous with email is going to release a device that doesn't have email on it. And because of that, it's, you know, I mean, here's where you are. The BlackBerry Playbook hardware standpoint is actually really,
beautiful,
really good hardware.
Beautiful.
It's a beautiful device. It, you know, it's just the right weight. It's just the right size. The way that RIM implements certain things on it with the active bezel, it's really, really good device. But it's kind of like having a Ferrari, and not only do you not have anywhere to drive it, but it doesn't have seats or wheels. It's just sitting. Well, it's got a really nice engine.
Feel
listen
the leather,
to how good
you know?
It sounds when you run it. But they released a BlackBerry that couldn't get email natively. I mean, you had to rely on having a BlackBerry in order to get email on something that also was called a BlackBerry.
It boggles the mind.
That when you start looking. When you start looking at you know, case studies on companies, and RIM is a big company, they've had a couple missteps, so they will be talking about them in business school somewhere. And it's going to be like, you know, could you ever imagine Craftsman coming out with tools that didn't have that, you know, return policy on? It's just like, it's just so anti to what a BlackBerry has always been that it made no sense. And Rod and Chris got to be on this. It's like, guys, there's no way they're going to release. Trust me, I don't have any inside information, but there's no way that RIM will actually release a device that can't get email. And then it came out, and it's like, you've got to be kidding me. They released a device that couldn't get email.
It's comical how bad of a decision that was. Now, I'll tell you what they should be looking at in business school when they look at this is, what happens when you have co-CEOs? And I really think, I don't know that that directly affected it, but I've worked in an organization where they couldn't figure out who should be in charge, so they put two people in charge, and it's just anarchy. It's the worst thing you can do.
You know, I think that you have one of two things happening here. I don't want to say it's anarchy between the two. What I think you have happening with those co-CEOs is that they just, the company has moved beyond them. You have Mike Lazaridis, who started the company. I mean, he's a coder, and he's grown this to this multi-billion-dollar entity. You have, you know, Jim Basile. I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but he's the business guy side of this. But they've been with the company since the start. And usually what happens when you have a company and it grows to a certain point, I mean, there are a lot of exceptions, but most times the people who started the company aren't the ones who run it in the next wave of business that they do. And I'm just wondering if, you know, businesses just kind of pass these two by. They are not doing an effective job. And, Apple is Apple, but to allow that company to come and just snatch market share without actually doing anything to counteract it is mind-boggling. I have no idea, you know, what they were thinking in their boardroom. Oh yeah, the iPhone, don't worry about it. iPhone 3G, yeah, I know it's selling like hotcakes and people are standing in lines that are quarter mile long to get it, but no, don't worry about that. Oh, 3GS, nah, don't worry about that. 4. Don't worry about that. 4S, don't worry about that. And it's like now, you know, Research in Motion, what they had to do with the new line of BlackBerry, they just said, you know what, we're not going to even make the new phones compatible with the old software. We're just going to put something completely new out. So the thought for me is that if that's what they're doing, what was the wait? Why would you wait this long to completely scrap your old stuff to go to something new?
So they made it expensive. It didn't do what it should do. They didn't pay any attention to the market. It might be a really long graduate level course to study all the mistakes. But my personal favorite, I mean, it's not as good as the fact that they didn't put email on. But the fact that Adobe this, what was it, last week or the week before, where they announced that they're not going to provide any updates to Flash on mobile devices, and then RIM turns around and says, oh, we'll work on it, we'll do it. And to me, I can just picture them being two people standing on the deck of the Titanic and going, oh, look, those deck chairs are open. You know, just really, you.
I don't know. I mean, I understand why Rome really had no choice but to say that we're going to do this, because they've put so much behind Flash. I mean, when you look at BlackBerry Playbook commercials, one of the things they tout in the commercial is Flash. So they've put all this in there. You can't just, Adobe decides to kill it. Well, we're not going, we're going to kill it too. And last week we were telling you it was the greatest thing in the world. So I understand why they're doing it. But it's just that, wow, Rim, it's kind of like when it rains for them, it pours. If you've been listening to the show, I've been calling Research in Motion Can't Get Right lately, because it seems like no matter what they do, they just can't seem to get things right over at that company.
It's sad, but it's comical. At least we can laugh, right?
Yeah, and it really is, because when you look at they had a mentor in Palm to say, Palm could have said, Rim, don't do these things.
Yeah, here's how we did it. You shouldn't either.
Huh. Exactly.
I never thought about it that way. Well, this has been really fun, Rob. I think you and I could go on for another hour, but I'm gonna actually wind us up here. I really appreciate your insight on this, and I like talking to somebody who knows a lot about a company, knows a lot about the devices, really loves it, and yet it can be very objective, I think, about what's going on in the company, good or bad. And I think that's one of the things that makes the Simple Mobile Review podcast so good, is because you guys are all willing to give each other a hard time, but give your own favorite device a hard time. There's no blind loyalty. It's not the fanboy thing, it's fan, but if your football team's being stupid, they're being stupid, right?
I'm a diehard Cleveland Browns fan, so I've got a lifelong of history with just not being there. So, but Allison, I really appreciate you having us on the show, and you've got to get back over and do another episode of the SMR podcast.
I definitely would like to. In fact, I wonder, are you guys doing one this week? I might be able to jump in.
We will be doing it Wednesday Ooh. Night, as always. Or, I'm sorry, no, Tuesday Ooh. Night. Tuesday night.
I better get a hold of Rod and suggest that to him. Hey, so let's wind this up. How can people find you in the future?
So my website is remarkable.com, and it's a playoff of Research in Motion. So it's not remarkable. It's remarkable, R-I-M-arkable.com. And I write, I don't want to say every day at this point about RIM, but probably 4 or 5 times a week I'm writing something about Research in Motion on that site. So I've been running it now for about 8 years. You can also get me on Twitter. I'm just Rob with 2 B's Dunwood on Twitter. So it's R-O-B-B Dunwood.
And Dunwood is D-U-N-E-W-O-O-D?
D-U-N-E-W-O-O-D.
All right, Rob. Well, I hope we get a chance to talk to you again soon. Maybe they'll pull it out of the fire and you can come back again and tell us about it.
Absolutely.
That's us holding our breath, right? All right.
It's been a blast, Allison. Okay, thanks for having me on.
Well, I really enjoyed having Rob on the show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. That's going to wind us up for this week, though. Many thanks to our sponsors for helping to pay the bills. We've got ScreenSteps and Clarify from ScreenSteps.com and all of the great products over at SmileSoftware.com. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. And be sure to circle me up over on Google+. We're having a lot of fun over there. All you got to do is search for me by name if you want to circle me up. If you want to join in the fun of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic Newsilla Castaways. In fact, I was thinking about it today. I might never have mentioned that you can actually go over to justin.tv, do a search on NoSillaCast, and you can watch the old live shows. So it's live, but not live. It's recorded, but you get to see the chat. You can see what it's like and see whether maybe you want to come over later. In any case, thanks for listening and stay subscribed.